Hello, Park Street. Welcome back. Thanks for listening again. Today is day 19 of our journey through the Book of John and through Lent. And I'm joined today by Cameron Johnson. So thank you, Cameron. Cameron, for people who don't know you, most people probably do, but can you give us a little life recap of how long you've been at Park Street, working at Park Street, coming to Park Street? How did you get involved? How did you get here? Ashland, Ohio.
Can do. I was an undergrad at Ashland University, and then I stayed around and got married and have a few kids, and now am the college and youth pastor here at Park Street. Sarah and I have been attending for like 3.5 years, and I've been working for almost 3 years, so it's been awesome just to hang out and get to know community and get to know people and learn more about the culture of Park Street and continue to grow in Ashland community.
Well, if you're having kids, man, get in. So
that's right.
Cool. Well, I'm really appreciative of you doing this. Today's passage is John chapter 8, starting at verse 31 and going through the end of the chapter, which is verse 59, so about 30 verses. You want to go ahead and read it?
Yep, let's do it. To the Jews who had believed him, Jesus said, "If you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." They answered him, "We are Abraham's descendants, and have never been slaves of anyone. How can you say that we shall be set free?" Jesus replied, "Very truly I tell you, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Now a slave has no permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to it forever. So if the son sets you free, you will be free indeed. I know that you are Abraham's descendants, yet you are looking for a way to kill me because you have no room for my word. I am telling you what I have seen in the Father's presence, and you are doing what you have heard from your father." "Abraham is our father," they answered. "If you were Abraham's children," said Jesus, "then you would do what Abraham did. As it is, you are looking for a way to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. Abraham did not do such things. You are doing the works of your own father." "We are not illegitimate children," they protested. "The only father we have is God himself." Jesus said to them, "If God were your father, you would love me, for I have come here from God. I have not come on my own. God sent me. Why is my language not clear to you? Because you are unable to hear what I say. You belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires. He is a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. Yet because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. Can any of you prove me guilty of sin? If I am telling the truth, why don't you believe me? Whoever belongs to God hears what God says. The reason you do not hear is that you do not belong to God." The Jews answered him, "Aren't we right in saying that you are a Samaritan and demon-possessed?" "I'm not possessed by a demon," said Jesus, "but I honor my Father and you dishonor me. I'm not seeking the glory for myself, but there is one who seeks it, and he is the judge. Very truly I tell you, whoever obeys my word will never see death." As they exclaimed, "Now we know that you are demon-possessed. Abraham died, and so did the prophets, yet you say that whoever obeys your word will never taste death. Are you greater than our father Abraham? He died, and so did the prophets. Who do you think you are?" Jesus replied, "If I glorify myself, my glory means nothing. My Father, whom you claim as your God, is the one who glorifies me. Though you do not know him, I know him. If I said I did not, I would be a liar like you. But I do know him and obey his word. Your father Abraham rejoiced at the thought of seeing my day. He saw it and was glad." "You are not yet 50 years old," they said to him, "and you have seen Abraham?" "Very truly I tell you," Jesus answered, "before Abraham was born, I am." At this, they picked up stones to stone him, but Jesus hid himself, slipping away from the temple grounds.
All right, thank you. So some of the passages in John are like nice stories that are easy to talk about. Yep. I do not feel like this is one of those passages.
Nope, it's not. There's a lot going on in here. There's a lot of controversy over who Jesus is, right? Like we see this like all through the Gospels, and it's not surprising that we see people continuing to wonder who Jesus is and what he's all about. And earlier in John, he tells people to eat my flesh and drink my blood. And now he's calling them liars and almost like a son of Satan, your father, the devil.
Yeah, it's kind of strong.
So it's super heavy.
Right.
So, yeah, it's very surprising just some of the language he uses in this passage. So,
well, it starts off, Jesus said to the people who believed in him. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like they're not really going to believe much longer. It seems like the clock is ticking on this, you know, but it was like he was talking to people who were at least following him and had, you know, at some level, you know, hadn't written him off at least. I mean, it's kind of interesting to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets into this in like 20 verses. They go from that to your father is Satan and you want to murder me and all this kind of craziness. It's like, it is kind of a little bit hard to follow. I guess the first kind of five or six verses, there's some kind of famous passages, I guess, in here. You know, Jesus starts off by saying, "You're truly my disciples if you remain faithful to my teachings." And you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And then he goes on to talk about how the difference between slavery and freedom, right, mm-hmm. as far as, like, being a slave to sin. Because the Jews, you're like, you know, the people who are answering him said, "We've never been slaves of anyone." Right. Which I find an interesting thing to claim, given the fact that, like, the whole basically Jewish story is based on the fact that they were slaves.
Right.
In Egypt. I mean, that's like the Exodus story is kind of the big Old Testament story. So I don't know what they quite mean by that. And it seems like, you know, if you think about the history of Israel, right, there was like one empire after the next, like consistently oppressing them. Like, it seems like they've been slaves kind of a long time. I don't know. Do you know what, like, what do you think that means when they say we have not been slaves to anyone? Does that mean simply like, no one tells us what to believe, like we've always had our religious heritage, or like I don't understand, I guess, what they're trying to say, because if you think about what you know about the Old Testament, it seems like there's a lot of evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, I don't know. That's really, I mean, that is really interesting. Either it's just been such normal place for them for so long that it's just become ingrained that they're used to having another country that's kind of over them and actually enslaving them, or they're like, and so they're used to that, or they're addressing something else of just like to be slaves to their own sin or something that's more on a personal level versus a corporate level. So yeah, that is an interesting thing. They seem to be avoiding the fact that they are slaves or they are under oppression
Have you ever heard of Stockholm Syndrome?
No.
So Stockholm Syndrome is, I think, a psychological disorder where, like, a slave becomes kind of like, they develop, like, attachments, like, to their captors.
Okay.
And it becomes, like, a dependency kind of thing where, like, they're not happy. Obviously, they're slaves, they're being oppressed, but there's, like, and somebody can fact check this. I'm definitely paraphrasing. I hope I'm paraphrasing correctly. But, like, they start to develop this kind of worldview where they can't see anything outside of, like, that slavery relationship or the captive-captor relationship has become, like, the lens through which they can't see anything else. They couldn't see a life outside of that.
Yeah, that could definitely be it. They just have an inability.
And I feel like what you're saying, like, they don't have an ability to see that they are slaves.
Yeah.
And I feel like, doesn't sin make that, I don't know, it's like Jesus talks about being a slave to sin. And they said, like, a slave is not a permanent member of the family, which is interesting because it's like you're in this, essentially, if you're a slave to sin, you don't even get the privilege of being a member of the family. It just abuses you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
It's like there's no good that you get from it. But and then he says, you know, if the Son sets you free, you're truly free. And it's like he's really pushing back, contrasting this idea that if we follow him, right, we're not gonna be abused.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I don't know that for me, following God has always been, there's always this fear, and I don't know if you see this in, you know, youth and college students. Yeah. It's like, if I follow God, I'm gonna give up things that I think I want to do, And is God just going to make me do stuff forever that I hate or that I don't want to do?
Right.
Is he going to make my life miserable? Mm-hmm. You know, I felt like I had, those were very real fears for me mm-hmm. in my early, like, teen years and college years and even young adult years. It's like, if I really go in on this thing, like, what could possibly happen?
Right.
If you lose the idea, like, it's tough to trust God with all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You're afraid he's going to, like, send you off to some, you know, do some crazy thing you don't want to do.
Yeah, I always felt like I was an ant under a microscope as a teen growing up, and just like I had to walk this very fine line that if I messed up, I was going to get zapped and just lit up. And so, yeah, I mean, it is very like Jesus is constantly reiterating this freedom, you know, of sin, and how like that's actually a more beautiful picture than the current conditions the Jewish people are in now, and the current rhythms of how they interact with God and have relationship with God. And so, yeah, it's definitely, I think, that Stockholm syndrome of just breaking out of like something you've kind of been conditioned and gotten used to over time.
Yeah. He goes on after that to kind mm-hmm. of talk about, you know, you're trying to kill me because I told you the truth. Mm-hmm. And then he calls them, you know, sons of Satan, I think, pretty soon after that. You know, you are the children of your father, the devil, and you love to do the evil things he does. He was a murderer from the beginning. And it's like, you know, he's saying you're going to murder me, essentially, you know, mm-hmm. like you're coming after me
yeah.
because I'm telling the truth about your situation and you don't right. want to hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think that in your experience, I guess, with dealing with youth, young adults, people, I guess, between the ages of 15 to 35, I guess, which mm-hmm. we're on the older end of that. But do you think people are part of or resistant to following Christ because of the hard teachings of the Bible? Or do you think mm-hmm. they're resistant because they have misconceptions about what it's like? Or what? Do you know what I'm saying? I feel like there are hard things. Like, to follow Jesus means there are some kind of, I guess, for lack of a better term, inconvenient truths, you know, that he pushes on you. And it's like things that are difficult to believe or that the world at large rejects.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think those things are things that keep people from really following Christ? Or do you think that's something that we deal with later on as we walk with God for a while?
Yeah, I think it's something that definitely happens as later on as you walk with God. I think there's just like early on in teens that I like get to hang out with, they're just trying to wrap their minds around the message and just deconstruct kind of the self-worth issues they have, or just like like with a lot of teens, it's usually just navigating identity, you know, mm-hmm. and just like, like if I can deconstruct that truth, you know, in them and instill that in them, I consider that success. So I don't necessarily see there's a lot of fear of like hard passages where Jesus seems to be saying some pretty like raw things. But I definitely think later on, it's like you come to some of these passages and you're just like, I never knew Jesus said that. Like, for Jesus, like, it just gives us more depth to who Christ was.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I think we come to Christ and it's just like all nice, and it's like, oh, he's like the savior of our life and savior of us, and how cool. But then it's like, oh yeah, he also like was really raw with people when they needed it. So,
yeah, and I agree with you. I think even in the like the Gospel of John, there's lots of places where Jesus, there are many different facets to his character, and I think we all have certain particular traits of Jesus that we tend to laser in on mm-hmm. and focus on at the expense of other things.
Yep.
So there's certain people in this book, you know, like even at the beginning of this chapter, there's a woman who's caught in adultery, right? And there's this story of this interaction between her and, you know, the religious people who are using, you know, the Old Testament to stone her.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this whole interaction, and he's acts differently to her than to, you know, how he's acting towards the religious establishment, which is who he's talking to, you know, in here. And it's mm-hmm. like, to people in authority, it seems like Jesus likes to throw the hammer down on people.
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
And to people who are on the outskirts or outcasts, he doesn't say this stuff to people who are like the woman at the well or the man he healed by the pool or whatever, some of the other stories we've kind of talked about, it seems like he reserves this kind of language mm-hmm. for the religious people that he is in rivalry with.
Yeah, absolutely. And so. It is fascinating how he contextualizes it for groups of people. Like, he is definitely rougher on those who claim to know something about God and to have those positions of authority. He just, like, unloads on them, and he's not apologetic for it. But we don't see that kind of language, you know, when he's interacting with those who have removed themselves from being children of God. And that's the message we constantly see with those he heals or come to faith through him. And he forgives their sins, and it's like he's more tender and caring and nurturing. So, yeah, absolutely.
But it is just wrapping your mind around all the facets of his character and all the ways he, like, skillfully interacts with people and says exactly the things he wants to say mm-hmm. and how he wants to say it. And, you know, how people seem to have strong reactions to Jesus one way or the other. Like, he's just an interest. Like, it's very difficult to, for me at least, to kind of understand all the different parts of Jesus. Because as soon as you feel like you kind of understand what he's going to say, mm-hmm. then he'll do something different and flip it around.
Yeah.
And he makes these kind of, like this whole passage is building to all these kind of basically ridiculous, at least audacious claims that he makes about himself, mm-hmm. you know, like in verse 51, I tell you the truth, anyone who obeys my teaching will never die.
Yeah.
Let's see. You say he is our God, but you don't even know him. Verse 55, mm-hmm. I know him.
Yeah.
And he's like, I know this sounds crazy, but if I didn't tell you this, like, I'd be a liar. Like, I have to tell you that this is the truth. Even though it sounds crazy, it's the truth.
Yeah. And it's like these audacious claims that are just so, like, fascinating. I mean, it just, like, gives us a picture of just, like, what he's trying to, you know, deconstruct and what people have just become accustomed to and thinking about God and how they think about even the language, the fact that, like, Christ is calling him Father, and then he, you know, starts to relate himself to God. But it is fascinating that, like, the people, like, right in verse 48, like, stood out to me, like, pretty heavily of just, the Jews answered him, aren't we right in saying that you are Samaritan and demon-possessed? Like, they're synonymous, like, they're together. And just, like, it makes you rethink, you know, through his parable of, like, the Good Samaritan. And just, like, how people are trying to, like, put a label on him because he, like, they're just having such a hard time of doing that. And so we even get it's just cool to get a glimpse into the cultural, like, the levels at which, you know, the Jewish people held other people groups and other people that thought differently of them.
No, I like that you brought that verse up because, first of all, the claim that he's a Samaritan is not factually true, right?
Right.
Like, he's not.
Right.
But he did interact with Samaritans, and in mm-hmm. fact, there's, you know, like, so he associated with them.
Right,
so
right.
The fact that they're using, that, you know, the people he associated with, that they didn't, mm-hmm. you know, like, he associated with the wrong types of people.
Right.
And they're using that as kind of like, you know, when you kind of debate somebody and you can't figure out how to beat them in terms of, like, logic or reasoning, you start name-calling.
Yeah, you go straight for, like...
you go for, like, the right, yeah. like the worst name-callings yeah, that you
exactly.
can go for.
Oh, well, you lived here, and, oh, you wear these kind of clothes, or, you know, whatever the thing is. Of, like, oh, didn't you do this when you were in fifth grade? It's like, it definitely feels like that, like, right, like, at the get-go of verse 48, for sure.
Yeah, it kind of builds back and forth. They start off with, like, we're descendants of Abraham. We don't agree with what you're saying. And then, you know, mm-hmm. they keep claiming, you know, we aren't illegitimate children, and then they finally just get, you know, fed up and just start, like, hurling insults. And, mm-hmm. And then, you know, they say they keep convincing themselves of their own position. You know, they kind of double down on everything.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. and they're like, we know you're possessed by a demon because there's certain things you're saying that we know can't be true. And right. since we know those things can't be true and you're saying them, you know, this is what we think about you. But mm-hmm. that's another interesting thing, I guess, is that people we all have assumptions of things that we think, well, that's just impossible, or that's not right, or that can't be possible, or that can't be true.
Yeah.
Which can sometimes, if sometimes hopefully we're right about those things, but if we're not, you know, it can really blind us to any kind of new evidence or new perspective.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Jesus does a lot of very like, he's trying to bring about like a posture of humility to people who are just not willing to accept, you know, a different approach or a different view to how they view God or how they view Abraham and the fathers, and just like the things he's saying, it's just it is a testament to like how stuck you can get sometimes and unwilling to hear with an open heart and kind of open mind of like what Christ may be speaking to you.
Yeah. And there's all this stuff about Abraham, like who's Abraham's on Abraham's, like whose side is Abraham on?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
No, he's on our side. He's on our side. Just like, no. He knew about me and was thinking about me.
Exactly.
You know, and it's kind of like, how often are we like jockeying for position to figure out, you know, whose side God is on?
Yeah. And it is fascinating because they're like leveraging a celebrity of just like to prove and validate their point. And how many times like have we tried to like think sometimes of like, well, I was like, I studied under this person, or I went to this person's like class, or, you know, just, or this person like affirms this value, and so that like should carry weight, and that like definitely feels like what they're doing.
It's interesting. The whole thing's interesting, and I don't even, I mean, I've enjoyed this discussion. I feel like I just still kind of sit back and I'm like, there's a lot of stuff in here that I'm just still not quite comfortable with. And maybe that's part of the point, you know, is there is this is awkward. It's very contentious. It's violent. It's not exactly like a nice 3-point, you know, sermon passage. You know, it's like, it's uncomfortable when Jesus gets feisty and starts like throwing tables over. Like, I mean, he literally does that in the temple. Yeah. And when he starts, you know, causing problems and saying things and, you know, maybe picking fights is not the best way to phrase it, but he's definitely like going after people at this point.
Yeah, I feel like he's trying to like, we try to redirect our toddlers in my house. So right now, that's what they're seizing around. It's like, okay, they're into something you don't want to do. Don't yell at them or beat them. Let's like redirect them. And I feel like it's always Jesus is just simply trying to redirect the posture that the like Jewish people have taken. And it just feels like they're constantly like toddlers. Like Jesus, like the very powerful, like, because there's all this controversy around who Jesus is and what he's about. Is he a prophet? Is he Elisha? Is he the Messiah? They're just like itching to know who this person is. Like, what is he going to say about himself? And very powerfully in 58, he finally lets it out and says probably one of the most controversial things he could have said is, before Abraham was born, I am. And so we know that the I am is tied to Exodus 3 when Moses goes before the burning bush and he asks that bush, like, is like, who is this? Like, can you define yourself? And the Lord just simply says, I am. And that's the best like translation they can come up with. And so at that point, it's like Jesus is finally just saying, like, I am like part of God. I am God. I am who like I say I am. I am what I am. I will do what I will do is kind of the translations that like come out of that.
Yeah.
And it's very thematic because we know at the beginning of John is like, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was with God in the beginning. And so it's very like he's carrying that theme in his writing, even in this passage as well. That's kind of shines.
Yeah. No, I just flipped over to the Exodus 3.
Mm-hmm.
And 3:14, it says, God replied to Moses, I am who I am. And the footnote is, or I will be what I will be.
Yeah.
It's like, I am the one who does not, like, there is no person else, you know, that created me. You know, I am the end point.
Mm-hmm.
Of, like, if you go back, well, who created this person? You know, if you go back further enough down that line, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also interesting during this whole passage that Moses is like protesting to God. God's saying, go to Pharaoh.
Right.
I'm sending you out to deliver my people. and Moses is protesting back. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, in the same way that God sent Moses, right, out, mm-hmm. he's sending Christ out.
Yeah.
In that kind of line of, you know, prophet kind of role. It's like, it is just, it's crazy that this person, you know, a human being, that, you know, Jesus was a human being, you know, mm-hmm. that a person like that would claim to be God. And it's not necessarily something that many human beings actually claim, and the ones that have besides Jesus, you know, they're fairly dismissible,
right? Absolutely.
And that's the thing that makes Christianity so weird, is that on the one hand, you know, I kind of feel for these Jewish people. It's like, Jesus says crazy things.
Yeah.
And he says a lot of weird stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, it's like, but the fact that he says all this weird stuff, like, nobody just goes around saying the weird stuff he says.
Right.
So it's like, and you kind of have to, he was unique enough, and the quality of his life was unique enough to where, like, 2,000 years later, Christianity didn't die out, right? Like,
yeah,
all this weird stuff that happened 2,000 years ago, a certain number of people believed it 2,000 years ago in the Middle East,
mm-hmm.
and they were willing to continue believing it even when they were killed,
yep.
and scattered around the world. And it's like, well, why did all that happen? It's like, either this stuff is true, like all that stuff, like it's like, what are there? That's a weird explanation.
Right. Yeah.
I can understand why people are skeptical of it.
Yeah.
But it's also, the other side of it is weird, where you're like, this guy claimed all this weird stuff, and yet it wasn't just a fad, you know?
Right.
It wasn't just like the guy, like the Kool-Aid, you know, like the phrase drinking the Kool-Aid. Like,
yeah.
I forget, like, there's a guy in, like, I don't know, 40s or 50s or 60s.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
You know, like these cult leaders, yeah. who, like, have a following, and then it kind of dies out, and it's like, the church has not died out.
True. Yep. Despite, flame's still burning.
Right. And it's like, that's so weird that there's something to that. There's mm-hmm. There's some level of testimony that says, despite the fact that we believe, you know, Jesus said all these crazy things that look ridiculous or impossible, you know, yet there's still the testimony to this guy is still around 2,000
right.
years later.
Yep.
So it's like, it just leaves you with this in between of like, gosh, like, how do I be a Christian? It's so weird. But on the other hand, it's not weird. Mm-hmm. It's actually kind of strange enough to be true.
Yeah. And he's just so affirming. Like, he's always saying, like in verse 54, if I glorify myself, my glory means nothing. He's always trying, like, he's always giving glory to God. And there's never a question in the people's mind of, like, he's not seeking his own, like, way. He's not trying to build a platform for himself. They try to make him king at one point, and he steps away from that. And so...
Right.
He just lives a life that's so compelling and embodies something that's just like leaves a different taste in people's mouths, good and bad. I mean, it's compelling for some people and repulsive to, you know, those that are in power. And so we always see this like resistance met with like his thoughts and the things he's kind of pushing back on.
Yeah, no, you're right. That verse 53, are you greater than our father Abraham? Mm-hmm. Like, who do you think you are? And he's yeah. like, look, I'm not just self-promoting, you know, like...
Right.
I'm not just trying to make a name for myself, you know? Mm. It's like God has sent me on this mission and I have to do what he wants me to do. And if I claimed that I was just a, you know, a random dude when I really am God, I can't say that because it's not true,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's like, it's just, he's saying, you know, like, yeah, I get it. Mm-hmm. I get what you're saying,
yeah.
you know? I have to tell you the truth. This is the truth. So is it really the truth or not? You know, like that's the question, I guess, that people have to kind of ask for themselves or answer for themselves. But it's
yeah.
like, it does present you with, Jesus is always, to some degree, like, just annoyingly uncomfortable, you know?
Right.
Like, there's this, like you said, we tend to have the view of like, oh, Jesus, he's my savior. Like, he just comes and like, he just takes care of me.
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, everything's awesome and he loves me. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, but there's a lot of other like really uncomfortable stuff that
right.
that he brings in because mm-hmm. of the, you know, if he really is God and he really does have this kind of power and authority, it's not this like, you know, Jesus in your pocket that you pull out and pet and pat on the head and put back. Mm-hmm. Like, it just doesn't work that way. You know? Yeah. So, I don't know. Do you feel like, I don't know, do we understand anything more than we understood?
Yeah, I think so. It's always fascinating that if nothing else works for the Jewish people or those in authority, it's just like pick up a stone and kill him. Like,
well, and that's the whole weird, the weirdest part about this whole passage is, right, like the way it ends.
Yeah.
It's like, so he says, I'm God.
Yep.
They pick up stones to throw at him, but Jesus was hidden from them and left the temple. It's like, what does that mean? I don't even know what that means. Like, he just like vanished or like he just walked away. It's like, well, it wasn't time for him to die yet, so he just decided to kind of just chill, peace out. Like, you don't, I have no idea. If anybody out there who's made it this far through this episode wants to tell me what that means, please tell me what that means. So,
yeah. And those are one of the few moments for me. It's like, if I go back in time, it's like, those are the moments I want to see. Jesus just slips away. Everyone's heated.
They're getting ready to kill him. But then he's gone.
He just pulls a Jason Bourne.
Right. He just, it's like, vanishes. How did he just slip through the crowd? What did he do? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I guess, hey, this was fun at least.
Yeah.
I appreciate your willingness to have a conversation about this stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining me for this time to kind of reflect on this part of the book of John. And we'll leave it there. Everybody, thanks for listening. And Cameron and I will do another one soon. So awesome. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys.